A farmer from Iowa who never went to law school. The words of Democratic Congressman and Senate candidate Bruce Braley describing Senator Chuck Grassley. How big a deal is his remark? It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Braley's comments later drew an apology, but what does this do to his hopes to join the upper chamber in 2015? Also on this Politics Day, a new ad by GOP Senate hopeful Joni Ernst makes waves nationally by equating cutting budget pork with pig castration. And well-known political prognosticator Nate Silver now says Republicans are slight favorites to gain the 6 seats necessary to win the U.S. Senate this year. Much to talk about with our analysts, Dennis Goldford and Bruce Nesmith, after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Politics Wednesday has once again arrived, I am glad to say, and also glad to say that we have Dennis Goldford with us, professor of politics at Drake University, and Bruce Nesmith, Joan and Abbott Lipsky professor of political science at Coe College. Dennis, Bruce, welcome to our program.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, guys.
We will focus, gentlemen, on the first half hour on the Senate. Several stories popping up just within the last day or two revolving around the Senate that we'd like to focus on and have our listeners join our conversation. We want to talk about Nate Silver's predictions for the Senate with the November elections ahead of us. Also, an ad campaign or an ad, the first ad by Iowa GOP Senate candidate Joni Ernst. But let's talk first of all about what Slate magazine calls the gaffe of the year.
Wow.
Speaking to a group of lawyers in Texas, Democratic Congressman and Senate candidate Bruce Braley gave this warning.
To put this in stark contrast, if you help me win this race, you may have someone with your experience, your voice, someone who's been literally fighting tort reform for 30 years in a visible and public way, on the Senate Judiciary Committee, or you might have a farmer from Iowa who never went to law school, never practiced law, serving as the next chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Because if Democrats lose the majority, Chuck Grassley will be the next chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
The GOP opposition pouncing on that comment by Bruce Braley, equating it with Romney's 47% remarks back in the 2012 campaign. Braley apologizing for the comment later in a written statement. I apologize to Senator Grassley and anyone I may have offended. I respect Senator Grassley and enjoy our working relationship, even though we disagree on some issues. Other parts of that apology as well are not mentioned. Braley was scheduled to hold a biweekly conference call with reporters today, canceled because of what his office said was a classified briefing. Let's talk about, let's reach out to our listeners, too. In the meantime, a farmer from Iowa who has never went to law school. How big a deal are Congressman Braley's remarks about Senator Grassley? Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, we're also on Facebook. Give your remark on our Facebook page at Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. Bruce Nesmith, let me ask you first of all, how damaging are these remarks?
I don't know that they're disabling. They certainly call into question Representative Braley's judgment. We're in a polarized political universe now, and I think that Senator Grassley may not be the demigod figure that he was a few years ago. In terms of, is this going to alienate potential supporters of Braley, people who might support both Grassley and Braley? Probably, but not. It wouldn't necessarily be the determining factor in the election. Still, it does call into question why the remarks were made at all.
Mm-hmm. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Dennis Goldford, your reaction.
It's Christmas morning at the Republican Party of Iowa, and Santa definitely stopped by the night before. Will this be – is the election over? No, not by any means. This is the end of March. It's not the end of October or even the end of September. Nonetheless, this was just remarkably foolish. Factually, the claim is true. You know, Chuck Grassley is basically a farmer, at least by occupation, prior to well over 30 years in Washington, and is not a lawyer. But the tone is condescending, and it raises the question, other than being insulting to Grassley because of the condescension. It raises the question, or at least if I were a Republican strategist, I would say, you know, the ad I'm going to pick out is, given what Braley said in that 36 seconds or whatever it was, who's he going to Washington to the Senate to represent, Iowans or lawyers?
Mm-hmm. For those, just to make sure we know, Democratic U.S. Representative Bruce Braley currently represents Northeast Iowa in Congress. He's the lone Democrat in the November 2014 race to replace Senator Harkin, who's retiring. What do you make of the apology? I'm trying to guess sort of a fly on the wall analysis of what happens after a candidate speaks, I assume not from a teleprompter, and says something like this. Bruce.
I hope it wasn't from a teleprompter. If it was in the speech, then there should be massive firings. I think at that point, when you're busted, you're busted, and there's really not anything else you can say other than what he said.
Mm-hmm. Any relevant remarks and apologies from the past that come to mind, Dennis Goldford, as a student of political history, that you can perhaps refer to the do's and don'ts of such remarks and apologies that follow?
Well, if I remember the wording of the apology, in this case, it was, if I have offended anybody. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not quite an apology. It's, well, you know, really this shouldn't have, but just in case I offended someone, then I'm sorry. We've had apologies or non-apology apologies like that in the past. But, one source I have over there, just by reading that source, suggests that the mood is pretty grim. You don't want to have to issue even a non-apology apology, let alone a real heartfelt apology. It just puts you behind the eight ball. I mean, I think the Braley campaign or Bruce Braley shot himself a little higher than his foot.
Kay is joining us from Waterloo. Kay, you've been listening. What do you make of Congressman Braley's remarks?
I believe it's a tempest in a teapot. I believe it's a diversion. Said it was absolutely true. He was speaking to a professional audience, and his comments were appropriate. As long as it is continues to be kicked around and commented, it grows life and legs. Mm-hmm. But I think it's all right for us to let it go and pass on to matters of substance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what about the remark Dennis Goldford made about the tone? Dennis, perhaps you want to jump in and react to Kay.
Well, I would ask Kay, are you already predisposed to support Congressman Braley?
I am indeed.
Okay. Now, think for a moment, how would this strike someone, let alone leaving aside what you think should be the case? How do you think this might strike any of your friends and neighbors who would be on the fence?
I really don't know. And I really don't want to speculate. I am really tired of news by speculation. I am tired of news by continued comment on matters that are not of substance. This is not of substance. It was ill-considered. An apology has been tendered. And now let us move on to things that are going to be of real concern.
Okay, Kay from Waterloo, we've got
your
point. Thank you very much. What about Bruce Braley's comments about Senator Grassley, a farmer from Iowa who never went to law school? Is it a big deal or not? 1-866-780-9100. Leave something on our Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. Also, our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Ryan is with us from Iowa City. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
Welcome to our program. Hey. What is your view?
Well, I'm an independent, and though I live in Iowa City, I've been on both sides of the fence politically, and I'm sorry, Kay, but it's a pretty significant issue. It is an issue of substance. What someone says around their friends and their cohorts, much like we saw with Romney, it's pretty important because Americans, most Americans that are independent, were pretty skeptical and scorned about the politicians and these parties. And so I think when you can see someone make a comment like that and they don't think that it's being taped, I don't think this is political punditry. I think this is revealing, again, some of the cheap shots that the parties feel comfortable taking at each other. Mm-hmm. I would have likely voted for Braley because I'm not very impressed with the Republican field. I probably won't vote for Braley as a matter of principle. I like Chuck Grassley.
But Ryan, just to jump in there, yep. Based on this one remark, you will not. You say now you were sitting on the fence. Based on this one remark, you will not vote for Congressman Braley.
I was likely to vote for Braley, and I will actively sit on the fence publicly and talking to friends and talking on Facebook. I feel this comment was a little bit too much, and I'm glad that people are aware of it.
Ryan, thank you very much for your perspective from Iowa City. Bruce Nesmith, what do you think of Ryan and Kay there as well?
Well, I like them both. I'm very sympathetic to Kay's points about substance, and I think most of what she says is true. Yet this is how the game is played today. And what you want to do is make sure that stupid comments don't get in the way of your substantive message. And did he know he was being recorded? He should have. Everybody in the world now carries around a little device that they can videotape people. There's, you know, unless you're in your family, you know, in your home talking to your family, and maybe not even then, should you feel safe to let your hair down and make off-the-cuff remarks?
Mm-hmm. We posted the question to our Facebook page, also tweeted it. We've had a reaction there. Tim Albrecht, a former spokesman for Governor Branstad, responds to our question, is it a big deal, which I asked. He tweets, yes, he's toast. Every word uttered, action taken, and ads run will be seen through the arrogant farmers are stupid lens. That's a tweet. Dennis Goldford, you wanted to jump in before we go back to the phones.
Yeah, there still is something of substance there. I mean, I'm sympathetic to Kay's concern, but as Bruce accurately says, that is the way the game is played. But still, I'll reiterate the substantive point I made at the top, which is that when you watch the video and listen to what Congressman Braley says, he talks about being there to look out for your interests. He's referring to lawyers generally or trial lawyers in particular. And the question is, as I said at the top, does he see his role in the Senate representing the interests of Iowans or the interest of lawyers, or what happens if there's a conflict between those two interests? Who is he going to support? That isn't simply saying something dumb. That is a substantive issue that voters would be interested in.
Robert is with us from Davenport. Robert, how do you see it?
I took a different take on it as the last speaker. I looked at it as being someone fully qualified to, in the instance of having to decide whether they were supporting one particular group or another, and being able to represent Iowans fairly, I think I would rather have the opinion of someone that is an expert in the law, having now gone through the schooling, the practices, and practiced the law over a period of time, having a better foundation to make decisions to support Iowa's just desire to move forward and be positive. A judicial committee chairman that has no background in law surely can't be as qualified to hold that position as someone that has a background in law.
Thank you, Robert, in Davenport. In Cedar Rapids, Richard joins us. Hi, Richard.
Good afternoon. I strongly agree with Kate. I believe it was Kay,
but go ahead. Yes, sir.
What I heard was Kate. Thank you. I think we've developed a culture in which we expect politicians in particular to be totally free of any errors. We'll never get that. They're people, mm-hmm. and until we release some of our criticism, and all of the attendant speculation, we're going to continue to have people who can only say safe things in public, which means largely say very little.
Mm. Interesting comments. Richard in Cedar Rapids, thank you for those comments. A couple of Facebook comments in reaction to our question. Does it change your opinion of the race? Carroll says on Facebook, actually, it doesn't. He didn't slam Senator Grassley, but he was pointing out a fact that trial lawyers might not want to see happen. He was speaking to a group of trial lawyers. Morgan on our Facebook page writing, is it just me or are we missing the real problem, which is that a candidate for an Iowa Senate seat is raising money and offering to be the voice of Texas lawyers? I know it's legal and business as usual, but how is this helping Iowa? Dennis Goldford, perhaps you can respond to fundraising and to where Braley was here.
Well, this is one of the things you have to do when you raise funds. I mean, you're talking to people and trying to get them to open their checkbooks to you. So that does tend to tilt you toward addressing their particular interests. And this is one of the vices of the privately financed system that we have. But that said, I think as much as to try to be even-handed here, to go on Braley's behalf, as much as Republicans will try to make this a race between Bruce Braley and Chuck Grassley, Bruce Braley will not be running against Chuck Grassley. So our fence sitter can say that he will oppose Braley, but again, the question in politics is always, well, you prefer this candidate as opposed to whom? Mm-hmm. So does that mean that any one of those six or so candidates on the Republican side for the Senate nomination would be acceptable in preference to Braley to our fence sitter? When we have a real live breathing Republican candidate, then this will tend to sort itself out a little more calmly.
One of those Republican candidates made news also yesterday. We'll talk about that in just a moment, Joni Ernst. But let's get Jeff in from Iowa City on this point that we're on currently. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to our program.
Howdy. I just wanted to remind people, I've watched CNN and things like that, Senate Judicial Committee hearings on TV, and I've seen Grassley more than once sort of plead that, well, I don't have a law degree and this law stuff is just so hard. And I don't see how he can have it both ways. He's been kind of an embarrassment to me. I'm not really sure why he's on the Judicial Committee, and it certainly doesn't sound like someone that should be a chair.
Jeff, may I ask your political affiliation? Where do you...
I'm a Republican.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I was raised a moderate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jeff, thank you for those comments. So you agree with Braley, just calling it factually correct, right?
Yeah. I don't think he was stating an opinion. He was stating a fact.
Okay. Jeff, thank you for that call from Iowa City. Well, also news over the weekend before this broke yesterday, well-known political prognosticator Nate Silver, a statistician who called every state right in the 2012 presidential race, says the Iowa Democrats have a 75% probability of holding on to Tom Harkin's seat in the U.S. Senate. Now, this was issued on his new website, Nate Silver's new website, on the weekend before this latest news broke. However, also on Nate Silver's new 538 website on the weekend, he predicts that the GOP has a slight edge now this fall to take control of the U.S. Senate. Bruce Nesmith, do you see the analysis of the Senate as a whole coming into the November elections in the same way that Nate Silver does?
Yeah, I think, he's got lots of algorithms and data, and he winds up with an estimate that the Republicans will be holding 50.8 seats in the Senate, which is obviously not possible. It's either got to be 50 or 51. But the point is that Republicans are defending a lot fewer seats than Democrats are this go-round, and a lot of the seats the Democrats are defending are either open seats or they're seats in states where Republicans are strong, like West Virginia or Montana, or both. And so, I think, as was the case in 2012, Republicans enter the race on paper in a very strong position.
Mm-hmm. Many months to go before November, several months at least, a long time in politics. Dennis Goldford, what is your reaction to Nate Silver's changed prediction?
Well, there might be a few people in the Senate I would consider 0.8 of a senator, but that aside, it's pretty narrow. And so that suggests that, we're a long way out, relatively speaking. There's time for it to shift back and forth. But yes, structurally, as I've maintained for a long time, midterms favor Republicans. Democrats have to defend just about twice as many seats as Republicans do this time. A higher proportion of Republicans will turn out to vote in 14 than will Democrats or independents. On the other hand, in 2016, as somebody said, if the Republicans win control of the Senate in 14, can they keep it in 16? Because in 16, 23 Republican seats will be up for reelection and only 10 or 11 Democratic seats will be up for reelection.
So is the question, what I'm hearing from you, Dennis, the question really is if Democrats can mobilize in this off year, which they traditionally do not do, they have a chance of holding on to the Senate.
That's the $64,000 question for those who even remember that phrase. They've got to be able to mobilize. In 2010, roughly 400,000 fewer Iowans turned out to vote than voted in 2008. But the problem was that twice as high a percentage of Democrats failed to turn out in 2010 in Iowa than Republicans failed to turn out. Mm-hmm. So mobilization is what it's all about. Democrats know that. The question is whether they can accomplish it.
I wonder, in the few minutes we have before the break, we can talk about the strategies you see developing by each party in pursuing control of the Senate and also, other seats that are in contention in this midterm election. Bruce?
A hunch is that Republicans seem to want to make it a referendum on Obama. So a lot about health care, a lot about Obama in general. Democrats seem to me not to have a theme, so they may be going state by state, where Braley's on his own here and somebody else is on their own in their state, West Virginia or what have you. So that's kind of the vibes I'm getting right now.
Mm-hmm. What about minimum wage, Dennis, and paycheck fairness for women? Those are issues that seem to be national issues.
Well, that's why the Democrats and President Obama have been emphasizing those, looking for a particular theme that is both national in scope and important on a state-by-state basis. Yeah, a midterm election like this will be a base election. You'll try to turn out your own supporters as well as possible, so you appeal to those issues that are red meat for those supporters.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we want to reach out to our listeners as we go into this break. Nate Silver now gives the edge to the GOP slightly in winning back the Senate in November. Is this a thought that makes you shine or shudder? Or do you think it really doesn't matter, given Washington politics? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Lots of action there because of the news we have over Congressman Braley. We want to talk about Joni Ernst when we come back from a break. But before we do, we have less than a minute left. But Dennis Goldford, can you give us sort of a vision of Washington politics should the GOP take over the Senate?
Well, on the one hand, Republicans will be in a position to articulate an agenda to set themselves up for 2016. There's a limit to what they could do because the president is still a Democrat. On the other hand, that gives a Democratic president in 2016 a chance to run against a Republican Congress. So it cuts both ways.
Okay, so you're saying it could set them up for a better 2016 if they suffer through the 2014 elections?
You mean the Democrats?
Yes.
Yes, that could help.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bruce Nesmith, a quick word from you on that?
Yeah, I think the thing about the Senate is that the filibuster rule is so predominant and the filibuster is used so often that 51 is not that much different in terms of passing things. Investigating, yes, but not so much passing.
Okay, we'll be back with our political analyst this week, Bruce Nesmith of Coe College, Dennis Goldford of Drake University, and you joining in our conversation about the latest political developments. And when we come back, we'll talk about a new ad by GOP Senate hopeful Joni Ernst making waves nationally by equating cutting budget pork with pig castration. It's purported to be the first ad to use pig castration as some verbiage there. We'll be back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio Politics Day in just a moment. So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News Politics Wednesday. Bruce Nesmith with us from Coe College, where he's the Joan and Abbott Lipsky Professor of Political Science. Dennis Goldford in our Des Moines studio, Professor of Politics at Drake University. You joining in our conversation either by telephone 1-866-780-9100. Also on our Facebook page, a good conversation going on there about what we've been dealing with most of the first half hour. Bruce Braley's comment, Slate Magazine calling it the gaffe of the year. Speaking to a group of lawyers in Texas, the Democratic congressman and Senate candidate gave a warning. He warned his audience that if Republicans win control of the upper chamber, quote, you might have a farmer from Iowa who never went to law school, never practiced law, serving as chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, referring to Senator Grassley. And we've posted a link so you can listen to that and watch that remark on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page where the conversation continues. We want to read a few of the comments that have flooded in over the last few minutes on our Facebook page. Much ado about nothing, Alan says on Facebook. Brad says on Facebook, everyone is upset because Bruce Braley stated a fact. They can bash each other over and over in campaign commercials, so what's the problem? Kevin says on Facebook, he is a farmer from Iowa. Ruth posts on Facebook, what I'm really tired of is the news media concocting stories instead of just reporting the news. I'm tired of the media constantly stirring the pot. It's only an issue because the news won't stop talking about it. Beth writing, wasn't Braley referring to Senator Grassley's qualification to chair the Senate Judiciary Committee? Does having legal training add value to that particular committee? Asks Beth. Lisa writing, I would rather have a farmer representing me than a lawyer anytime in politics. More common sense and good work ethic. Where have the lawyers gotten us so far? They seem to think too large for me. I would like to see more small farmers hold on to their farms, and I don't feel the lawyer mentality lies with those thoughts. Some of the comments left on our Facebook page. We want to go to some callers here and then hopefully wrap this up and move on to an interesting ad by Joni Ernst. But let's talk to Thomas, first of all. Thomas is calling from Des Moines. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, good morning or good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Thomas. Welcome to our program.
I'm an independent. I've contributed to Mr. Braley's campaigns in the past, and I'm not a single-issue person, so this doesn't decide things one way or the other, though I do kind of wonder if he didn't commit the cardinal sin of politics, which is saying what he actually thought. Seems to get you in trouble, but it would seem to help the voters to know what someone actually thinks. My curiosity about this, though, has to do with the civics question. To my understanding, a lawyer has a fiduciary responsibility to their client. In other words, the client's needs come first before the lawyer. And now that's different than an advocacy or lobbying group. So isn't the purpose of the Senate Judiciary Committee not to protect the lawyers and the lawyers' interests, but to protect the American public or to look out for the interests of the American public, i.e. to act as the fiduciary for the for the general citizenry? I kind of wonder if there's not a civics question that needs perhaps one of your panelists could help to address. The purpose of the committee is to protect the lawyers and their income.
Okay, Thomas, thank you for your comment from Des Moines. Let's see if we have a comment. Dennis or Bruce?
Well, the principal functions of the Judiciary Committee are to deal with appointments of judges and constitutional amendments. I don't know if there's a particular interest that trial lawyers have there other than judges who may or may not look favorably upon particular strategies of trial lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Just jumping in here, sharing some more comments from our Facebook page. John writing, when I heard the NPR commentator read Braley's comment out of context, I thought it was stated as a compliment. When I heard Braley's recorded comments and understood the context, I was highly offended. My reaction is this is a Romney 47% moment. Don in Marshalltown writes, if all elected lawyers were replaced with Iowa farmers, we would not be in the political mess we are now. Catherine writes, spare me the disdain about Braley's remark. How about the completely irresponsible death panel comments made by Grassley? He spread lies? Really? He's a better choice? Asks Catherine. A lot of activity going on there. Let's go back to our calls. And Dwight is with us from Centerville. Hi, Dwight. Thanks for listening and joining in.
Hello. Yeah, I don't necessarily think that, being a lawyer or going to school for it necessarily makes them more qualified. To me, Grassley, yes, he didn't go to school for it, but he's got the years of experience, the common sense of knowing the people and what affects them. Oh, and he's more down to earth. I kind of thought it was a a cheap shot at the farmers, but I have a, my family, most of them are farmers, so I guess I was a little put off by his comments.
Okay.
That's it.
Dwight, thank you for joining our conversation with your perspective from Centerville. A few other Facebook comments. Ryan writing on Facebook, Braley is going to win no matter what happens or what he may have said. I was inclined to vote for him because I don't like to skip votes, and I can see a Republican. I can't see a Republican that holds a candle to his qualifications. I may think that Braley will be an improvement over Harkin, but I will not likely vote for Braley or a Republican now. Jump in there, Dennis, with your comments. We're getting a lot of comments. I know I'm taking up time there. We'd like your analysis on this.
Yeah, I'm not sure that last one made a lot of sense to me unless I missed something.
Yes, but I was looking to see if I misread it, but actually I think I read it correctly.
Well, you see, this is the whole point about my comment that, you know, it's Christmas morning at the Iowa Republican Party's headquarters. This has generated a lot of controversy, and it's got Braley on the defensive. He was able sort of quietly for all these months in the background while Republicans fight among each other to raise money and build his support. But now he's put himself in the limelight for a bad reason rather than a good reason, and that enables his opponents to be on offense.
Okay. Let's talk about something else related to the Senate. Iowa GOP Senate candidate Joni Ernst. Joni Ernst, a Republican state senator, candidate for the U.S. Senate, being vacated by U.S. Senator Tom Harkin. If she would win the GOP nomination, she may face, the sole candidate on the Democratic side, which would be Bruce Braley. She unveiled her first ad from a crowded GOP field in advance of a June 3rd primary. It's definitely grabbed attention. You can look at the national media that cover politics. It's all over. In it, she stands in a hog barn and offers this introduction.
I'm Joni Ernst. I grew up castrating hogs on an Iowa farm. So when I get to Washington, I'll know how to cut pork.
Joni Ernst, mother, soldier, conservative.
My parents taught us to live within our means. It's time to force Washington to do the same. To cut wasteful spending, repeal Obamacare, and balance the budget. I'm Joni Ernst, and I approve this message because Washington's full of big spenders. Let's make them squeal.
Drake University's Dennis Goldford, your reaction.
Well, it's cute, it's clever, it's highly graphic. It may offend some sensibilities, but nonetheless, it's clever, but it's also highly superficial. I've never seen a hog castrated and don't particularly care to, but presumably the hogs can't fight back the way people who are going to have programs cut can fight back. So State Senator Ernst may think cutting spending is as simple as castrating hogs. I'm sure the hogs would wish that castrating hogs was as difficult as cutting spending is.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, though, Joni Ernst, in a crowded Republican field for that nomination, wants to stand out. If she's achieved the goal, right, Dennis?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it helps her. I talked to one moderate Republican who tends to favor Planned Parenthood and abortion rights, which is not your mainstream Republican position now. But she's very interested in supporting Joni Ernst, because Joni Ernst would be the first woman from Iowa to go to Washington. So she's got that advantage amidst a bunch of guys. And this, of course, tries to show that she's tough enough to play with the guys.
Mm-hmm. Bruce and Dennis, let me get your reaction to the headline in the Iowa Republican today to that ad we just heard. The headline, "Did Joni Ernst just turn herself into Christine O'Donnell?" Now, that referring to Christine O'Donnell, a candidate for the U.S. Senate in 2010, a campaign ad which famously began with the words, "I am not a witch." Bruce, how do you read this ad? Is it going to – there is some risk here, isn't there?
Yeah, sure. I don't know that she – no, I don't – I wouldn't compare her to Christine O'Donnell. But, you know, what an ad like this does, as you said, is it gets her the spotlight. Now the question is, what is she going to do with the spotlight? And if her response is, you know, more wisecracks and no substance, then it probably doesn't. It might enforce, it might create not the image that she wants to.
Mm-hmm.
But if she can, now that she's got the attention, use it to explain policies and things like that, then it might. It just can't be her entire campaign.
Certainly getting attention of the news media from coast to coast. Headline from ABC News, Iowa Senate candidate threatens D.C. with castration. Gawker.com. Here's the worst ad campaign ad today, thanks to this hog-castrating mom. Time magazine, Iowa Senate candidate says castration gives her conservative cred. Political headline, Iowa's Joni Ernst, I'll castrate D.C.'s spending. So any other comments on this before we move on?
Yeah, the comparison I would make is to Sarah Palin's talking about being able to field dress a moose, and I've not seen that done either. And the problem was that this had a kind of earthy appeal to it, but that there was no substance there.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a few other things in politics. It's Politics Day here on River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer with Bruce Nesmith of Coe College and Dennis Goldford, professor of politics at Drake University. Obamacare, let's talk about the latest development there. Late yesterday, the White House announced a two-week delay for individuals who have not been able to finish signing up for Obamacare. The deadline originally March 31st, the end of this month. Speaker John Boehner's reaction was quick and sharp.
Last night brought us a yet another delay of Obamacare, another deadline made meaningless. You know, he hasn't put enough loopholes into the law already. The administration is now resorting to an honor system to enforce it. The hell is this, a joke? This is part of a long-term pattern of this administration manipulating the laws for its own convenience. And it's not hard to understand why the American people question this administration's commitment to the rule of law.
Dennis Goldford, the delay and the reaction there, we heard from John Boehner. What's your read?
Well, the reaction is what we'd expect, certainly. And this does reinforce the impression this is just a tremendously complicated, if not out of control, law and program. At the same time, you had all sorts of people saying when the healthcare.gov site had such a disastrous rollout that it would be unfair to penalize them for trying to register and not being able to because of the mishap with the website. In a sense, this would be an attempt to, in a positive sense, to help people who were disadvantaged by the bad rollout to the website. It's to give them extra time.
Mm-hmm. And the Democrats, I see, countering in the press with a reminder that the Bush administration did something similar back in 2006. Then it was implementing the Medicare prescription drug benefit that President Bush had signed into law. It announced the GOP administration announced it was waiving penalties for low-income seniors and those with disabilities who signed up late. Bruce Nesmith, how do you see the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, as this deadline approaches?
Well, I think what Obama's trying to do is make it work and make it not collapse. I think Boehner's comments indicate pretty clearly he'd like to hold still and fall apart. So I'm not particularly taking that seriously. I think that the closer we get to the election and whether people feel like it's confusing, whether good stories get out on either side, I think that's going to be the long-run impact, political impact of the act. Clearly, it's intended to achieve a policy purpose, and probably that more needs to be said about that as well.
Mm-hmm. Jason is joining us from Ames. Thank you for waiting, Jason. I'm not sure if you wanted to comment on this latest one or some of the other things that we've covered this hour.
No, you had brought up before of the effectiveness of the Congress with in regards to the president. My feeling is that how the president wields the executive orders, I think he's a little bit careless with that and a little crass, and is subverting the Congress's will by using executive orders very readily.
Okay, Jason, comments from Dennis or Bruce on that before we move on?
Well, executive orders have been used lots of times to help with the policy implementation process. They are a power, I believe, that comes from Congress, although some presidents may want to claim they come directly from the Constitution. But still, you have a situation in which any president is going to use one of the lever, whatever levers he believes he needs to use or will try to use to work his will. And the question is how far Congress would push back.
And so this latest delay by the administration is a matter of execution, as they interpret it. John Boehner obviously seeing it in a different way.
The argument has always been that the president, at least in theory, is not supposed to make policy. The president is supposed to execute policy. And you would think this is a matter of helping the execution of policy. But again, others may argue it's an attempt to circumvent those limits and actually to make policy.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the where the president is this week. He's been traveling in Europe for an emergency meeting with the G8 nations, but the number has been reduced to seven in this case. After a meeting Monday, leaders of the coalition of major industrial nations announced it would be suspending Russia's membership in the G8. That announcement came after Russia sent their foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, to the meeting. After being told of the suspension, Lavrov said, quote, "If our Western partners believe this format has exhausted itself, we don't cling to this format." All of this comes, of course, after Russia's military action in Ukraine, the annexation of Crimea, and at a news conference with the Dutch Prime Minister this week, President Obama asked whether Mitt Romney had a point when he identified Russia as the United States' biggest geopolitical foe during the 2012 presidential campaign. Obama says the U.S. faces many threats.
The fact that Russia felt compelled to go in militarily and lay bare these violations of international law indicates less influence, not more. Russia's actions are a problem. They don't pose the number one national security threat to the United States. I continue to be much more concerned when it comes to our security with the prospect of a nuclear weapon going off in Manhattan.
President Obama speaking in Europe this week. Dennis Goldford, what do you think of the president's assessment and what's been going on here?
Well, you know, I read somebody recently, or maybe it was longer ago before the Ukraine crisis hit, that who said rather caustically, if not but wittily, that Russia is essentially an oil and gas company that has the power to issue passports. That, in fact, they've become a regional power, which is precise as opposed to a world power, which is precisely why you got this pushback from Putin, because of wanting to try to regain that status. But in actual fact, in terms of American diplomacy and interests around the world, because of its population and especially because of its increasing military and economy, China is perhaps, at least in the 20th century, the number one geopolitical factor in the world for the U.S. If the late 20th century was Russia, in the 21st century, it's China.
Mm-hmm. Bruce Nesmith, what's your view?
Yeah, I think the problem with Romney is not that he picked the wrong opponent. It's that is the whole language about the number one geopolitical foe is just not the way the world is organized. China is perhaps our rival, probably the biggest, most able to project stuff, but I wouldn't describe them as a geopolitical foe either.
Mm-hmm. We have a couple minutes left. What's on your political radars for the coming days, Dennis Goldford? What haven't we mentioned that you might want to throw out there?
Well, given my interest, of course, in law, politics, and religion especially, I'm very interested in what will be the outcome of the case in the Supreme Court yesterday regarding Hobby Lobby and its claims for religious exemptions from aspects of the Affordable Care Act. What's especially interesting, of course, is to what extent can a corporation itself assert religious rights? To what extent is a corporation possessed of personal rights, if you will? Mm-hmm. And we won't find that out until June, but that's especially interesting.
Based on coverage of the oral arguments, which we've covered very well here on public radio, do you agree with the interpretation that the Supreme Court may allow corporations to mount religious objections to government actions?
Well, they certainly granted corporations free speech rights in Citizens United a few years ago. The problem, of course, is Scalia wrote the lead opinion in Employment Harvard Division versus Smith in 1990, saying that you can't claim a religious exemption from a generally applicable law that's not targeted at a particular religious group or religious minority. And, you know, will Scalia eat his words or will he stand by his words? He didn't in the Affordable Care Act case with words in Gonzalez versus Raich. So I would see another 5-4 decision at this point, and very possibly it's Kennedy who will be the swing person.
Mm-hmm. Bruce Nesmith, your comments briefly on this or another topic that you want to get out there?
The one that's kind of caught my eye is the mudslide in Washington, and it's just an awful way for people to die and an awful tragedy. But once that's dug out, do we start talking about how that was a human-created situation with building in dangerous landslide-prone areas?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us this week. We look forward to talking to you as we get more chapters in this never-ending novel of politics in our nation, in our state, and in our world. There's several items we didn't get to, but we'll be covering those as we do in the future. Dennis Goldford, professor of politics at Drake University, thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Bruce Nesmith, Jonan Apit-Lipsky, professor of political science at Coe College, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Ben.
And tomorrow on this program, Ron Smith had a bat in his room while he was sleeping, and he needed a rabies vaccination to avoid a potentially life-threatening illness. When he walked into the emergency room, he had no idea he would be responsible for thousands of dollars for what seemed like a pretty minimal vaccination procedure. Tomorrow on this program, the cost of an ER visit. An ER physician and a hospital administration expert will join us to help you better understand the reasons behind the numbers you see on your ER bill. That's next time on River to River. We always welcome your comments and questions. Our Facebook conversation continues if you'd like to join us on that. We always like to see your comments there. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.